hello! Welcome to the big show. This time the host has changed a little bit. I don't know. No, Jürgen just couldn't make it this time. He had some internet troubles at home. So he asked me to take over, and here we are. We have a little bit of a smaller panel today. I don't know where Atli is at. He probably is burying one of his relatives or something. I don't know. But
burying a neighbor, burying someone that drove down the street, who knows? Yeah,
random stranger, something like that. I mean, he has enough space. Neighbor might be difficult. They're too far away. But maybe someone, as you say, maybe someone who drove down the street. But could be. Just someone who just passed by accidentally. Yeah. Anyway, no, we still have really cool panel. Always happy to have you guys here. Let's start with Alistair. How are you doing? How's France?
Oh, well, welcome to the small show.
Today it's the medium. Let's call it medium-sized.
Yeah, well, I've been making the most of the good weather before it turns bad. I know it's going to turn bad because on Monday next week, where I live anyway, we're all going to be free. We can travel up to 100 kilometres from our homes and stuff. So I could end up in the Mediterranean if I go in the wrong direction. I'm glad I'm on with Jeff. I've just put a link in there. So in Wales, they've had sheep wandering around the villages because of the lock-in. And of course, in Boulder, you've got your mountain cats waiting to drop on your head. Well, us, we've got sharks coming into the marinas.
I'm watching your video right now and seeing the dorsal fin going shh.
Yeah, and there's the bloke who took it was just a maintenance guy. You could hear this. Hey, look at that!
That sounds like he's calling all his friends. Come and look at this.
Yeah, so it was taken in a town called Set, which is obviously a coastal town, and it has very complicated marinas. But it has lots of inner town canals. It's almost like Amsterdam, but on the sea.
Wow.
So these kind of got sharks roaming the little rivers and canals now because the boats are not being used. But as of Monday, that'll change because all the boats will be allowed out, including pleasure boats.
Wow.
There you go. We've got sharks.
That is crazy.
At least they don't drop on your head.
I'm just showing that.
You know,
wow.
That's sharks. That's hard to compete with.
Yeah. It is.
Okay. If they did drop on your head, it'd be like Sharknado.
It would be very much like Sharknado.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and next to Alistair, we have Jeff. Jeff Gamet. Long time no see, right?
I know. I feel like it's been forever. I really missed you, Patrice.
Oh.
Yeah, no sharks here.
Oh. That would be funny, though.
Yeah, if we start having shark issues here in Colorado, my guess is that just in general, we have much bigger problems.
Yes, very much so. I think there might have been sharks hundreds of thousands of years ago, or something like it at least.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Colorado was very much not just oceanfront property, but ocean property.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts of the state South Park,
mm-hmm.
which you have probably heard of.
Yes.
That was the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And when you drive into the area, I mean, you come up over ridges or however you're getting in there, and you come down, you're basically driving down what would have been a very steep shore.
Yeah.
And then you drive along was the ocean or the sea floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and the Grand Canyon, towards Arizona, Arizona basically is was underwater back then, which is crazy. Now it's a desert. Back then there was plenty of water. Too much, actually.
Yeah, we have fossil areas where it's obvious it was the shore and not for a lake, for a sea or an ocean.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, so we only got a couple of stories today. So you can even pick two if you have two. I think we have enough time to discuss two of them since it's only the three of us. So who's going to have one first? I have to look to the
go side. On, Jeff. You go first.
There we go.
Okay.
Oh, let's have a look.
Let's have a look.
All right. So it's on a 9-to-5 Mac, but it is not an Apple story. So here's the deal. Wink, you know, they make smart home devices. They sent out an email, which I got 2 days ago, mm-hmm. where they said, on May 13th, we are switching to a subscription model, $5 a month. And if you don't pay the subscription fee, then your Wink cameras just stop working.
Wow.
And now I appreciate that companies need to have revenue to stay in business. I mean, that's just how it works. And doing subscriptions for a service, I totally get that. What's happened in this case is that it's happening with a product that people already had, and they're going to be losing all the support for that product.
Yeah.
And they have 7 days to figure out if they want to pay $5 a month or just have their cameras stop working.
Wow.
And so this has led to a lot of backlash. Like some Wink customers are saying this is essentially extortion.
Yeah.
Others are saying, oh, well, you know, this is going to make your company go bankrupt. Probably not. I mean, if the company was going to go bankrupt, it was probably going to happen regardless of whether mm-hmm. or not they implemented a subscription for their camera service. It's clearly getting a lot of backlash from users. And the problem that I see is that they dropped this on everyone with 7 days. It's not like the people that just want to get a different camera and call it good mm-hmm. can easily do that. So this is getting them some publicity they probably don't want. and of course it's been compared to the Sonos thing. And Sonos, they had time to backtrack and come up with an alternate solution to their problem. But in this case, it's not even like a new product is coming out. They just chose to drop this news on their users now mm-hmm. with just a week. You know, at least I just realized my story last week was about Automatic just going belly up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at least with Automatic, it was a thing where they said, okay, this is happening. You have time to get your data and you have a couple weeks before a month or whatever mm-hmm. before the device is going to stop working. So people had a buffer zone.
Yeah. 7 days is nothing. Like, I mean, some people might not even see the email in time. Like if they're on vacation or whatever, and they're not checking their emails at all, or like wherever mm-hmm. they are. Like they're camping right. somewhere in the middle of Colorado where there's no internet access.
Well, the tax office doesn't doesn't give you much time either. They usually send you letters, don't they? That are they say, you know, please get back to us before the, you know, within 7 days of the date above. And the date above is always 2 months ago, even when you receive the letter. So.
That's true. Yeah, no, I mean, this is definitely very, very bad. I mean, I agree. It's kind of extortion. I mean, I don't know. It's probably not legally extortion, but I think as a user, it would feel like it. I mean, it's basically, I bought this device, I paid money for it, and now I can only use it if I pay you another $5 a month that I didn't know about when I bought it.
Yes. And it just occurred to me, I have a good comparison mm-hmm. for this, which is Canary. And when Canary launched, I think they launched as a Kickstarter. Part of the deal, along with we're making a high-quality camera, it's going to look nice in your place, and it has all these great features for security. Mm-hmm. Part of the deal was, and you don't have to pay a subscription for the service. Mm-hmm. And it stayed like that for quite a while until they realized that their business model wasn't bringing in revenue to support the company. I mean, they were making some money off of the camera sales, mm-hmm. but once someone has bought the camera, then the revenue is done unless they buy another camera. So they eventually realized they did need to do a subscription service. So what they did was they announced that it was coming, and instead of just cutting off all the features, they had the core feature set. So your camera is functional. Mm-hmm. What you lost was the online storage mm-hmm. and recording.
Yeah, which is okay. I mean,
it upset a lot of people.
Sure.
And I can appreciate that because mm-hmm. they thought that they had basically free storage for life.
Sure.
But their camera continued to work, and it's been fine. Mm-hmm. And the company did not go bankrupt and is still around today. In fact, I have a Canary camera that sits in my living room as a security camera, mm-hmm. and another one in my office, and they work fine. But they gave people enough lead time so mm-hmm. that they could decide what they want to do. And when they did it, they didn't kill all the features.
Yeah.
So it's a tough transition to make. But Canary was able to do it, mm-hmm. and they did it in a way where, well, it hurt for some people. It was a good transition, handled pretty well. Mm. But now with the Wink thing, 1 week and your cameras are just shut off.
Yeah.
That one kind of sucks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can understand it, as you said. Like, I mean, I can understand it that from a company perspective, I mean, especially the Canary thing where, I mean, unlimited storage forever, that doesn't work. Like, I mean, someone has to pay for it somehow. And like, yeah, I mean, you might pay for some with the price of your device, but like ultimately, like forever is a pretty damn long time. So I can understand that, especially with video, which is like usually, even if it's lower resolution, like security cams are usually, at least to some extent, mm-hmm. it's still like a lot of data. I mean, we know it. Like if you have your own, like your Plex server, like we talked about in the Mac show, like you know how much data that like your backup of your DVD collection takes up. It's not easy. And like, I mean, scaling that up to every customer and like for every camera and like multiple cameras and whatever, that's a lot of data. And I can that's totally understand that. So I mean, I can understand that companies have to make money somehow and have to figure out a way.
Well, I was thinking, since it's a smart home thing and mm-hmm. part of the feature set is obviously to switch your lights on and off, why didn't they just look back in history? Isn't it quite famous that the original electric light was deliberately made to burn a little bit too badly, or the quality wasn't so good so that they would mm-hmm. pop after a while? Mm. But they were so cheap to make, people didn't seem too concerned the fact they would pop. Mm-hmm. And no one actually told them they didn't need to if they'd been made properly in the first place or used a different tech. So why don't they just have software that after about 16 weeks goes bang,
and
then
you have to go
and buy it again, and people would think that's okay, completely normal.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's very interesting.
It wouldn't be a subscription service. I wouldn't be held to ransom.
No, it's a consumable
just, it's just
camera.
Natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. All just... software goes bang after a few weeks. Sure. You have to buy a new one. It's normal.
I should
put it in the recycling
bin. I
should
work on that.
Yeah, Patrice, you're going to be so rich once you get that figured out.
Yeah, I'll work on that. Consumable so, software.
So the camera thing, the issue that people are dealing with Wink, and I'm actually not using any of their cameras, so it's not a problem for me. But what I did when I needed to get additional cameras for home security, I started buying cameras from Wyze mm-hmm. because you can get the basic camera for $20 or the one that has motorized base. You can mm-hmm. remote control move it. And that one's like $29.
Wow.
But they have a micro SD card slot in them. So you can, if you want to record, just pop the SD card in and away you go. Mm-hmm. And what they did when they wanted to add in an additional revenue stream, they created a subscription service, mm-hmm. but it was a new thing. So you could, if you want, you could then pay for your online storage, mm-hmm. which you didn't have before.
Yeah.
And then it also added in a thing where it can identify humans and track humans specifically. So that, you know, you can buy their cameras and never use a subscription with it because you can just pop your own card in and record, assuming you want to record. Or if you want to have these other features mm-hmm. that are just add-ons, not something that was taken away, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, I mean, I know a lot of companies are doing that, basically. Like Logitech, for example, like their subscription is like you get a base level of like, I can't remember, like I think it's 7-day storage for free per device mm-hmm. or something like that, which is like not too much. And then if you want longer term, if you want advanced features as well, you pay like, I think it was like $12 or $15 for multiple cameras and per month, and that's it. But it's for multiple cameras, so it's basically your entire house, your entire setup. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Which is still less expensive than paying a subscription for a security service that mm-hmm. that is putting their cameras in your place and yeah. their sensors in your place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like definitely also cheaper option in general, like mm-hmm. less service, less like things you get for it. But like, as I said, if you have multiple cameras, I think the single camera one was $10 a month, if I remember correctly. And then the multi-pack was like 15 or so. But as I said, that's reasonable. I mean, as I said, there's a cost involved and you get extra features. And that's okay, but you can use the basic camera for free. Like, well, you pay for the camera, one-time purchase, yeah. but that's it.
Sure, and then you just use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it works. Like, it wasn't that you needed the extra stuff, really. If you didn't think it was worth it, then you didn't pay for it.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, but what's happening here, this is the sort of thing that leaves a bad taste in people's mouth towards smart home technology. And the way companies are, just as a blanket statement, the way companies are either like dropping support for products that their users think should still be supported, mm-hmm. Taking away features and then offering them back for a price. I feel like the companies that are doing this, they should probably have thought through this earlier
yep.
so that they could come up with a transition mm-hmm. that was less jarring to yeah. the users.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds a little bit like the typical startup thing, like get investors on board, like get the product out there, figure out the monetization later, and then all of a sudden
the monetization is all about selling it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for the investors.
You have a startup,
yes.
it sounds dead cool, then sell it, mm-hmm. and you walk off with whatever, 10, 20 million in your back pocket.
Yeah.
That's the financial model of practically all startups now.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. But like, in order to get to that point that you can sell it off, you have to show that you can make money, that someone actually wants to buy it. And that's the point where they then start and say, okay, now that we have the money, now that we have the company, now that we're selling, we somehow have to figure out how to make this look as attractive as possible to someone who wants to yeah. buy it.
Well, I mean, you know, the lock-in and all this business mm-hmm. at the moment is a lot of investors are pulling back because I think I'm going to mm-hmm. ship my money offshore again.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Alistair, do you have
your first story? I do, actually. Look, I'm going to put a, it was a press release. I'm going to put a link in to the press release itself. So depending upon your browser, it's either going to download a Word file or it's going to appear in Google Docs on your screen or something. But it was for a publication that I don't actually read, called cybernews.com. But they decided to investigate the top 30 apps on Google Play for protecting passwords, you know, so security password type things. Guess how many they found were dodgy? All of them. The top 30 security programs. They said none, if I quote, none of the top 30 Privacy Vault apps on the Google Play Store should be trusted. And our advice is to delete them at once. So they've been downloaded like hundreds and millions of times.
Wow.
And if you scroll down far enough, you'll actually see the list of the 30. Yeah, and if you've got one of those, the recommendation is run away.
There it is. Dangerous permission. Of this,
678,600,000.
So I quote again, Our research revealed that all of the top 30 Android Privacy Vault apps request the ability to write files to your device, which will allow them to infect your phone with malware. 27 of them want the ability to read your files. That gives them access to the photos and files you wanted to keep safe in the first place. Now, I have to say some VPNs do that. They ask for a bit more access than really you wanted to give them. You know, I know it's a VPN and something's going somewhere, but still, it's the whole point. Was I just want to keep it on my phone or somewhere else. I didn't actually want to share it with you. That wasn't part of my security plan. Was, oh, I shall just find people I've never heard of on the Google App Store and share it with them. Yeah, that's good security.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of my stories of the week. But yeah.
I can get that some apps might do it, or like, I mean, we know that, like, some in the Android space especially, there are some apps that do stuff that they shouldn't do, but it's like literally every top, like, what was it, top 10, top 50 app? That's like...
Well, it's the top 30 of this specific type, and they're saying four of the developers in that list, whose five products were downloaded 570 million times.
Wow.
Have been publicly identified for data theft, and for infecting users with malware.
That is crazy.
Now, you can't trust anyone. Talking of malware, I have to say I've had a busy couple of weeks this past couple of weeks doing training courses for design training, design software. And last week I was doing a Photoshop course, and in the middle of the Photoshop course, this little window popped out of nowhere advertising the latest version of Corel Photo Paint. Now, I do have Corel Photo Paint, but I was in the middle of a Photoshop live Photoshop course with eight people online watching me, and who'd also paid. And I thought, well, I've got all notifications switched off. Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. And it literally kind of slid up from the bottom and then slid back down when I got rid of it. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. And then this week I was doing InDesign, and this thing pops up, goes, new version of Corel Draw is out. Okay, close it quick. It just goes back down again. And I thought, I've just been infected with malware from Corel, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, who'd have thought? And sure enough, I found in the last place I expected, in the settings in Corel Draw, there's a setting. And it's all ticked. No one, I don't remember being asked this. But so, you know, obviously, you know, there's a tick that says, let me know when new software comes out. Yeah, of course I want to know. But there's a thing that's not ticked. It's just active that says, you know, make it slide up from a drawer. I mean, I was hunting for all sorts of kind of hidden bits of software. I thought, would it be called Corel something? I was in, you know, Activity Manager going, where is it? But it must be there somewhere. So I managed to find a way of switching it off. But I thought that was a bit naughty. But the fact is, I was teaching Photoshop, and I see a Photo Paint ad. I'm teaching InDesign. I see Corel Draw ad. It must be tracking which program I was using.
Absolutely,
it probably is.
And I thought, that is it's, what else is it looking at?
Yeah, that is insane. Yeah,
very naughty.
Yeah, a lot of apps are. I mean, some of them we know. I mean, we know that Facebook is siphoning off like as much data as they can. Same probably for Google, but like, I mean, it's the stuff that you don't expect, where it's like, I mean, you bought the app and you don't expect it to basically spy on you and like advertise like their latest versions to you.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, it was just, yeah, in the middle of a course, yeah, after you switched all notifications off, and it came up anyway, and it was, where was that running?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
All right.
But yeah, so if you've got a password vault, just get rid of it. If you see that top 30 list, if you've got the link, have a look, just check through. If you've got it, get rid of that. Get something else. Get 1Password or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Get KeePass, something.
Yeah, get something. That's the point. Something from a like good source. Like don't just download the random Android app.
Yeah. Get the one at number 31 in the list.
Or that. Yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I don't understand the world of like malware and like all those tools, but it apparently pays well, because otherwise, like, why would anybody do it? Like,
it also brings up the topic we were discussing a few weeks ago about the difference between when you want to submit an app to the iOS store compared with submitting to Google Play Store. The latter is so easy. You can as a developer, you pay a little bit of money, it's very cheap, and you can get all the tools, you can upload it, and it can be there that afternoon. It could be on the store. I think it's a little more involved if you try to do it to the Amazon Android store.
Yeah.
But on iOS store, it can take 2 weeks. I've known it to take longer. I've known it to take 5 weeks.
Yeah, it depends on your app.
It's the time of the year. If you do Christmas, they don't like it.
And I mean, if it's a developer that has known good apps, it's faster, for example. Like, it depends, really. But yeah,
and everyone's going, oh, why does it take so long? And you go, it takes long because a human is looking at it and they're checking, and they've got a long checklist of things. Is it doing this? Is it doing this? Mm-hmm. And it's tracing where it's reaching out and connecting to. And, Apple are very, people say, oh, Apple are really fussy and hoity-toity about this.
But, and sometimes they are.
But I mean, I think the one thing that they've always had is they know that if a Mac or an iPad or the watch goes wrong, no one's going to go, oh, what a terrible piece of software have I installed. No one will say that. They'll go, oh, it's crap iPad. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's iPhone. Mm-hmm. Shit.
Apple's crap.
They know that. Yeah. I mean, that's why they never ran Flash, because they knew that no one would go, ooh, this Flash technology is pretty bad. They'll just go, iPhone shit.
That's true.
And so they're absolutely right. Yeah. Annoying though it is, they are actually bang on right.
Yeah. In case the listeners want to know where they can find all the links, you can head over to britishtechnetwork.com/, I think it's, now I'm, no, I don't remember what it was actually. Shit. Chat, I think, and then you scroll down to what day is actually today?
Today May 8th,
May 8th, around 8:40 UK time, and you will get all the links, everything we posted. My story for today is, I think it's going to cost someone some money. At least if you're in the Sonos ecosystem and you've been waiting for this, which I haven't, but I'm still like, I had Sonos before.
I did see this story. Go on.
So Sonos just released 3 new speakers, including a $799 soundbar, which is expensive for a soundbar. It's Sonos. The Sonos Arc is the company's new high-end home theater soundbar. There is also a subwoofer that got an update. Let me scroll down a little bit. I have to say, like, the design is really, really nice. Like, it's mm-hmm. a very sleek, very Apple-like design. I mean, comparing that to, like, what Sonos used to do, where it was like, I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was more boxy. They've definitely improved their design language. I can see here, like, it looks really nice, like, under a really nice big screen. But it's $799, so, like, it's definitely not the cheapest option on the market.
Yeah, but that's cheaper than the existing Sonos soundbar, right? I forget what they called it.
So, wasn't it like $1,500 or something like that? It wasn't cheap.
Yeah, it was not cheap.
Yeah. Anyway, like, there's no, in this article, there's no picture of the sub, unfortunately. But they've released a new subwoofer, which will cost
I'm looking on the Sonos web.
There it is. Yeah, $699.
Yeah, on the Sonos webpage, the soundbar, excuse me, the subwoofer for the mm-hmm. soundbar. It looks basically like if someone took an Apple TV and put it on its edge.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there we go. So there's the soundbar. There's the subwoofer. It's probably going to be in German now. Yeah, it detected my language. Let's see.
Oh, that's wacky.
Yeah.
You can put things in there.
It just detected the location, apparently. Let's see.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
There we go. That's the English version.
See, we're on a theme here, because didn't Sonos get in trouble for trying to do this, trying to go, right, everyone, upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Upgrade their firmware. You're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the new subwoofer. You're right. It looks like an Apple TV, and then someone cut a hole in the middle.
Yes.
Yeah, like a Dyson version of the Apple TV.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. I've got a fan in it.
They also released a new Sonos 5, a Play 5, I think. Ships in June, so not shipping yet. That one looks, to be honest, looks more like their usual offerings. Like, it's not that special.
Cosmetics case, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit sleeker, but it's not that much better. Yeah. So if you're in the Sonos ecosystem, I know Ewan would love this. You might buy one.
He's a fan.
Yeah. You can spend, what's that, like almost $2,000 now? It's like, yeah, $699
for the Sonos stuff is so nice.
Yeah. $699 for the subwoofer, $499 for the Play 5, and $799 for the soundbar. So yeah, if you buy two Play 5s as well, you can spend some money.
I was looking at their packages,
mm-hmm.
and so you can get the Arc, which is the nicer of the mm-hmm. new soundbars.
Mm-hmm.
A pair of SL speakers, and then that subwoofer, $1,856.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go with a smaller soundbar, the Beam,
mm-hmm.
$1,359.
Okay, not that different.
and it's still surround sound.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the Sonos ecosystem, or you're about to get into the Sonos ecosystem, mm-hmm. Something like this could be nice.
Yeah, the changes, like, other than this design, are more like internal, like more memory, more power, a little bit faster processing in general, which, like, you will benefit from. Like, it usually means less issues with sound, like less buffering or anything like that, delays.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's definitely, I mean, if you're in the ecosystem, it's definitely worth not worth an upgrade, or if you're into this. It does not have any Alexa or Google Assistant features. So.
Oh, so good. That's good. I'd pay extra for that, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when I moved down here to, you know, get the new house and everything, I've got a very cheap Chinese soundbar.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, yes, I'll treat myself to something really squanky, maybe get one of those Sonos ones. And then we moved down, then, you know, got my internet connection and everything. And they said, right, you know, we'll sign up to get your films and your TV and everything. They supplied was it called Diavoli? I don't know. It's basically a triangular speaker unit and media player all in one.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously sits under the telly. And the sound, the size of it is extraordinary. You know when you get those kind of bass tones that you can't hear, but you can sort mm-hmm. of feel them in your chest? You get all of that. You don't have to play it very loudly either. So the only thing I miss is you have no sense of stereo at all. I don't know if that matters.
Mm-hmm.
I quite like the old Hollywood films of two people speaking and then you could hear on either side and you go, ooh, is that funny? But so I don't get that anymore because it's kind of surround and
mm-hmm.
I don't know why it has to be triangular, but it has it's supposed to have Alexa and the company's own little system on it, and thank the Lord it doesn't work. Tried to make it work and it doesn't. And all the users online and the forums are saying, this is terrible, it doesn't work. And I'm thinking, brilliant. That means it actually doesn't work. And I don't have to call anyone up to disable it.
Good. Oh, that's funny.
Well, it's a problem now, isn't it? With, the official security recommendation at the mm-hmm. moment is, could everyone switch off their smart speakers? Because you're all working from home.
Mm.
And it, I mean, I don't care what anyone says. It is listening all the time, even when you switch it off. But now it's listening to all your work stuff as well as all your home stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it is at least listening locally. Like, even if it's not sending it anywhere, it's still listening.
Yeah. Otherwise, how else will it work?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alistair, do you have another story for us?
I did have another little story, but it was more of a, not quite a personal one. I've just posted it in above yours. Normally, in the world of journalism, including IT journalism, people you write about sue you for libel.
Mm-hmm.
And it may or may not go to a court case, and if you do go, you may or may not win. This is a story of a couple of colleagues, dare I say friends, on the publication I write for most, which is The Register, where they sued one of the readers for libel.
Okay.
So the story I put a link in isn't actually the story on The Register. They're not crowing about it. Mm-hmm. It's actually a story in the UK Press Gazette reporting on it. And basically, this thing goes back 2 years.
Wow.
Where, you know, just one ordinary, everyday news story about some guy. And it was a classic piece of journalism where, you know, someone went to checked on the court reports,
mm-hmm.
what's going on, and there was some bloke just got caught with one of those VAT frauds. I mean, there's so many of these about. It was just one of those vaguely IT related. They wrote a story about it, and that's it. Okay, move on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this guy had then kind of said, "Oh, it's not true. I'm appealing," and he appealed and then lost his appeal. So it must have been true, one assumed. But then, you know, as they say, he would not let it lie. He would not let it go. And then he started kind of mailing out to people saying how distrustful The Register was. And then I actually got a cartoon made of the news editor
mm-hmm.
who wrote the story and shared that, and then started actually paying for ads, anti-Register ads, that would pop up in people's feeds saying how terrible they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy who wrote the story, he was now like head of news, and my boss there, also sort of head of the UK operation, you know, they were thinking, oh, could this guy just not go away? And it got kind of really to, I would say, like trolling stage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where they just thought, well, we've got to make him go away and shut up. And the only mm-hmm. thing I think of doing, I think, was, well, you know, going around saying we're crap and we've lied about this. Mm. And it was just reporting
from ads.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a court report. We do, you know, this happens all the time. It's not a matter of conjecture. It's just a court report. It's something that happened.
Yeah.
They're not even saying the guy was a crook. They reported that the court said he was a crook. You know what I mean?
It's just,
they took him to court and they've just won. But it's just unusual.
It's totally
news operation suing a reader.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in general, it's very unusual. Like usually, like for any company or like news outlet, the guidance I want to say, or like the usual thing to do is to just ignore it. Like, I mean, trolls are out there. They will say whatever they want. Like, it's like, I mean, anybody who has a YouTube channel knows that. Usually the best approach is to just ignore it. But they were like, no, this is not right. And we're not going to do something.
This thing about that normally an aggrieved reader would sue the publication.
Yeah.
But this guy didn't. I mean, he had recourse to do that if he wanted to, I suppose. It would have been cheaper if he had. He would have got nowhere. But, but actually now he's having to pay costs and everything on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he had to pay for ads on top of that.
yeah, okay. So it was kind of a happy ending story. Well, I hope it is an ending story. I mean, the guy sounds, he's done his quote, which showing contrition, which is important in libel cases now, Britain, to keep costs down, the awards down. But, I mean, I hope he does just leave it alone and move on with his life. Mm-hmm. And doesn't just pop up again another 2 years in another guise.
No. That would be scary. Had he just left it alone, no one would know who he is.
Yeah.
And no one would have any idea anymore that he had been in a court report about VAT violation.
Yeah. I mean, I know it would still be on the website, and it still is on the website, the story. And I suppose if he left it a few years, if he was really bothered, he could always invoke that right to be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a story. And if ever you read, you know, online publications like The Register, the stories shoot down that page through the course of the day. And only 3 days have to go by. Mm-hmm. And that story's long gone if you haven't.
Yeah, people have forgotten. It wasn't a major story anyway.
Like, no, it was just a straightforward story. Mm-hmm. You know, just one of many, many, many that just passed through the day. So happy ending story.
Not for him.
No.
All right. Jeff, what do you have got for us? Do we have a second one?
I don't have a second one.
Okay.
But if you've not, I can find one real fast. I'm good at that.
I'll keep going. It's not really a story, but I'll share this with you. It's a surprise, and I'll put it in French so it doesn't upset too many people. I'll put the link in first and try and explain it while you're trying to look at it. Because of the lockdown, lots of advertisers have withdrawn their budgets and so on. So a lot of publications and media providers and so on are struggling not having the advertising. So I have to say, even say the local newspapers here where I live, where they used to run ads for cars and expensive holidays and watches and booze, they're now running ads for little computer games and stuff, you know, like shitty little things. And my wife said, you know, she just bought a glossy magazine and she said, have you seen this? And there was like a full page display ad, glossy mag, for vibrators.
Mm.
You know, and there's a complete, you know, not a rude magazine, a completely normal women's magazine. Mm. So what you're seeing now is the kind of thing that is popping up in you know, everyday social media feeds and normal glossy magazines. And I say, more advertising, the better. It's just unusual.
It is.
I was fed up with seeing, you know, yet another ad for yet another Candy Crush ripoff. Mm. But now, we get kind of all sorts of weirdly shaped vibrating toys for men and women.
Well, the fact that they're advertising this right now actually really makes sense.
Oh, it does.
Yes, because we are now in, it's like International Masturbation Month. Like, seriously. And so... I have friends that have sent me some of the press releases that they've gotten. I don't get those press releases anymore.
You should.
I should. I know, but I get them secondhand. But there are companies that are sending out their press releases with their products related to Masturbation Month. Mm.
That sounds dirty. Secondhand press releases.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, one, ad revenue is down. Like, I've heard that from others, like from podcasters and so on. Ad revenue is definitely down. A lot of companies are not, like, advertising at all, or, like certain areas simply. I mean, like, restaurants right now are probably not advertising as much since they're all closed. Things like that, like, simply all companies that are, like, closed and shut down right now, they're not advertising as much. So that's a big opportunity for the ones that are, like, usually forgotten or, like, yeah, don't have enough money mm-hmm. to like, get to the forefront, and now they can. So it makes sense. I mean, it's very weird.
It's just entertaining seeing some unusual advertising for a mm-hmm. change, rather than the usual set of, as I say, cars and expensive clothes. Mm-hmm. We're seeing some unusual plastic goods.
Yeah. Those are massage devices, right?
Yes. Yeah. Personal massage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I absolutely not. I have another story to share. It was actually the original story that I wanted to pick. And then I found the Sonos one. I was like, I'll go with that one. NASA is, or basically NASA's EM drive leader is working on a new project. So he left NASA. Guy's name is Harold White. He was apparently in charge of the EM drives for their probes and so on. And he has joined a new nonprofit that is focused on building technologies to bring humans to the outer solar system and beyond. So literally figuring out a way how to, like, at least go to, like, the farther away places in our solar system, or even eventually leave it.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, like, science fiction at this point still. Like, it's far away. But, I mean, you have to start somewhere. You have to start with, like, an idea, and you have to start developing the technologies. Mm-hmm. And then you will see where it goes. I mean, we talked about that, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago, when we talked about like Voyager probes and how far out they are. I mean, that took a very, very long time for them to get there. They're traveling really fast, and then on a cosmic scale, still very, very slow.
Yes.
So we absolutely need, like, if we human beings want to travel any place other than, like, I mean, even Mars is far away for us. Even that takes forever. But if we want to travel to, like, I don't know, Pluto or something, or even further out, we absolutely have to figure out technology and, like, ways how we can travel faster and still be safe. And, apparently he's 54, and he's super excited about it. So he left his probably very cushy, at this point, very cushy NASA job. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
And like, joined a startup where, like, nothing is certain, but it's also, like, very exciting.
It's I find that very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Having people that are genuinely interested in figuring out safe and fast ways mm-hmm. for us to go and explore other parts of our solar system. And then ultimately beyond our solar mm-hmm. system, that's very cool. Yeah. I mean, humans are curious mm-hmm. animals, mm-hmm. and we've always been explorers. So it seems only natural that at this point we are looking more and more seriously at exploring outside of the comfort of our own atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and even like even I would say even outside the comfort of our solar system, because to some extent we've explored it. I mean, we've sent probes. We haven't gone ourselves. I mean, other than Moon, but like I mean, Mars is at least reachable. Like it's something that we can envision that we will go there in like whatever 10 years or something. It's not too outlandish, but like leaving the solar system still feels like, I mean, that's total science fiction, at least at this point. Like, and like he's, I mean, the funny thing is he is literally looking at warp drives and like all that like science fiction stuff that we know from Star Trek and from Star Wars and from like all other science fiction shows, like some kind of faster than light travel. And there he is like seriously from a scientific perspective looking at it and like saying, okay, what like what is realistic or what is possible or what like what would it take? Is there something to that? And I mean, physicists have worked on that for like a long time. Or like at least speculated about it. But he's like he's saying let's like take that a step further and let's see what we can do. And like you never know. I mean he sounds like a little bit of a mad scientist.
But you know, that's probably because of what he does.
Yeah, and that's probably also the kind of person you need for this job. I mean, it's like you need the mad scientist that figures something out that everybody else thought wasn't possible.
Like, mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Like, I mean, we'll see whether that goes anywhere. But like, it's definitely. I think I'm always very excited about this stuff. I mean, it might ultimately they might run out of money or whatever. It might just bust. Like. Combust completely. It's a startup. You never know. I mean, it's not a university or something that has like government funding or anything like that where they could literally just like go on forever and just keep researching. It's a startup, so they will have to secure some kind of like funding source at some point.
Yeah, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah,
and. You know, we didn't always have flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
until someone figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, still different, but like, I mean, we knew like because birds can fly, we knew it was somehow possible, and we just had to figure it out. But this, I think, is different to some extent, but you never know. Like, I mean, whatever we're imagining today and thinking it's completely outlandish might be possible in, well, at least a couple hundred years, maybe, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a time where people assumed we couldn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time when the idea of going as deep into the ocean as we can now seemed impossible. There was a time not that long ago when people were concerned about how fast steam engines would pull trains. Mm-hmm. They were afraid that if you hit 30 miles an hour with a train, that the human body would melt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there was a time where we couldn't even imagine computers, let alone having computers in our pockets or on our wrists. And now we're there. Like, it wasn't even like nobody even really thought about it and like could imagine it at all. And now we have it and it's like not even a big deal. So it's sad.
Yeah, that's true.
Just sometimes someone just has to be crazy enough to figure it out. Like, I don't know whether he will be the one or whether he will just like lay the groundwork, whether it's even possible. Is that like, I mean, we can't imagine it, or we can imagine it because we have science fiction. Like,
that's true.
We just don't know whether it's fiction or science.
Well, I mean, based on what we understand now, the idea of faster than light travel is impossible because nothing seems to be able to go past that threshold. Although we have had experiments in the past few years, I think, where, and I don't know if they've actually been able to replicate the results, but they had light particles that move faster than they should be able to move.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that's a very interesting thing right there.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a theoretical, like there's a theoretical way, like at least like math allows for it. Since gravity can bend can bend the in space, there might be a way like to circumvent that limitation. But like that is theory, and we don't even know whether we would ever be able to do that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the idea behind the warp drive in Star Trek.
Yep.
Because the ship isn't moving faster than light, but time space is being bent around it, so it is essentially moving faster than light.
Yeah.
So even though it's not.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, and I do remember, like, over the last 20, 30 years, there have been a couple of papers that, like, theorized that it might even be possible, like, even doable, but, like, nobody has been able to really do it or prove it. So, yeah, well, it will be very, very interesting to see what comes out of that, company.
I can only imagine what sort of power source you'd need for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said. Like, we don't know how far off it is.
I think in order to fold space, you need lots of spice. Isn't that right?
Yes. And a very big spatula.
Yes. Yeah. No, it is. Yeah. Well, we'll see. It's, for me, it's stuff like that is totally fascinating. I mean, well, I like science fiction, so it kind of gets your imagination going.
Patrice, you should check out the link Windrider dropped into the chat.
Okay. Alcubierre Drive. Oh, yeah, I think I've seen that one, yeah. That might have been one of the ones that I remember from the past. Yeah, I'll check it out. Cool. Jeff, did you find the second one?
No, because I've been so enthralled talking with you.
Okay. No, I think we're good on time anyway. So I don't know if, honestly, if you have another one you want to share, we can do that. Otherwise, we can continue.
Well, I've got two cool things of the week. So
okay, then let's do that. Cool. This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network are supported by TSO Host. I should also put up the website. They're really cool. Like, I mean, I've set up ours, like our BTN servers. Those are TSO Host servers. They're really good. They've been rock solid since, I don't know, 2-3 years. Like, barely, I mean, we rebooted them for, like, upgrades, and that has been it. Like, zero downtimes. Nothing. Like, I mean, they must have done maintenance or something, but, like, we never noticed anything. They're really, really good. They offer anything from, if you need domain names, you can register them there. They're really good. They do web hosting. They have pre-built packages for WordPress and so on. Like, so if you wanna set up a podcast, or you wanna set up your, I don't know, your new science startup, or like, I don't know, a new blog or something. They have pre-built packages. They obviously offer servers, virtual servers for actually, I think, reasonable price. The thing I really, really like about them is, like, I've been watching them, like, interact with BTN listeners on Twitter, which is really important that you reach out to them and let them know that you really, like, enjoy their support and, like, thank them for supporting us. But, like, there have been BTN listeners who, I don't know, wanted to set something up or weren't sure how to do it. And they just reached out to them on Twitter, and they were really, really nice and really quick and helpful. And I really appreciated that, because that is not usual. Like, that's something that not everybody does, unfortunately. So if you're in the on the market for anything like that, head over to tsohost.com. There's also a offer code from BTN. It's BTN20. It gives you 20% off and on anything you order on TSO Host. And please, if you do use them, if you sign up for anything, if you buy anything there, please let them know that we sent them and thank them for it, because it's really, really important that they help us or continue helping us with our server bill and everything, because otherwise we would have a big issue. Like, it's a lot of data, like all the old shows and everything. Like, you can literally go back to the very beginning, and we still have those files. I don't know whether they still show up in the stream or in the feed, but we still have them. And so tsohost.com. And the other one, I don't know whether that's also on the Big Show. I'm just going to do it. Iman Max. It's more a Mac company, but they actually do repair other stuff than just Macs. Callum is usually on the Mac Show. He works for Iman Max. And the funny thing is, like, I asked them whether they could repair like my headphones. They said, sure. We talked about Greeny's Chromebook, I think a week or two ago. And like they can apparently repair almost anything as long as it's like computer based electronics. So if you have something that's broken, you need someone to fix it, just head over to imandmax.com, and they also have a 5% offer, I think, if you just mention BTN. So please also support them. So Alistair, what have you got for us?
Yes. Actually, what I have is, because during the lock-in, I don't see much cool stuff anymore, so I always have a crap thing of the week. I've got a cool thing of the week and a crap thing of the week. I'll do the cool thing first, which I'll just paste in to here. I think, have I just pasted that in? Yeah. So what it is hang on, I'll have him get the thing on my screen as well. It was actually from last week, and I missed it. It's a small thing, but it's basically Google Glass in a contact lens. So it's not available yet, but if you hold the key, you can poke things with it without having to touch them. So I don't know if you can call that up.
I actually know a couple people that have bought this, and they say,
okay, and you're going to tell me it's fantastic.
They tell me it's fantastic. I cannot say that firsthand, because I don't have one. But what they like is that it's brass, or no, this is not the one they have, because this is brass. The ones that they bought are copper.
It will be copper. Yeah.
And copper has some natural antibacterial properties, which doesn't help with viruses, but whatever. And the ones that they bought, they actually really liked.
Yeah, I just think it's... I don't know, for a funny kind of hook-shaped object, I could get one of those vibrators, use that instead. And it's a vibrator, so I think it'd be better value.
Yeah, just make sure that if you do that, you disinfect it before
Yeah, before it'll probably come with gel, won't it? Comes with gel, surely.
One can hope.
Yeah, one can only hope. All right.
Oh, I just thought, for God's sake, you know, I complain about the stupid ads that keep appearing these days, but this was just, you know, it even looks crap.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that one doesn't look nearly as nice as the one that my friends have bought.
Yeah, I wonder what the rough edge was for. Is it for sawing things just idly when you get bored, like the edge of the table, you know, while you're on a Zoom call?
Yeah, that part... It's not making sense to me.
You know, across your teeth, you know, when you're bored. Well, there you go. I thought that was... sorry, if you're watching Cocooning Shop, but I think that's terrible. That is stupid. Anyway, so those are my two things of the week. And there you go.
Wind Raider says, looks like a beer bottle opener.
Well,
the funny thing is, I've seen some of these where they actually advertise that there's a beer bottle opener built into the loop part.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, being serious about it, I mean, this thing is about, what, 2-3 inches long. I mean, for it to be actually any good, it needs to be about 3 feet long. I mean, just, my fingers 1 inch away from the door handle. Well, you know.
It's not going to do anything. Door handles are probably the cleanest thing right now, because nobody wants to touch that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Jeff, what have you got for us?
All right. So I have a cool thing, and I actually have a follow-up to the Big Show that I can do as well. So my cool thing is an app called Raw Plus for the iPhone, and it's a camera app. And what I like about it is that, you know, the iPhone supports raw images, but the camera app that's built into the iPhone does not take raw images. Yep. So this lets you do that. So you have like full control over the camera. And so you're setting ISO and shutter speed. I mean, like total control. And then the images that it captures are in raw format. So when you take them back to your computer, or if you have an image editor that supports raw on your iOS device into there, you can actually work directly with raw image files. And it's free. You can pay, I don't know, I want to say it's like $5 or something. And then, yeah, it's $5. And it unlocks it completely. Mm-hmm. And I can't even remember what it is that you get for that. But what I've been finding is that even without having paid for it yet, it's doing absolutely everything that I need for raw image capture. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it says the first 100 shots are free, and then you unlock it, and then you can basically use it forever.
Oh, okay. So I haven't done 100 shots yet. And you know what? I am totally cool with that. $5, and they let me do 100 test shots first. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I should just go ahead and pay for it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, and in a year's time, in 1 year's time, they'll say, no, actually, it's $5 every month. or your software will go bang.
Exactly.
That's right. And
I will sell them my patented consumable software.
Yes. That's right. Yes. Okay, so my follow-up thing to this to the Mac show, or the big show. Yes, it was the Mac show this morning.
Mac show, yeah.
We talked about Plex servers and I realized, wait a second, I can take one of my Raspberry Pis and turn it into a Plex server. So I found the instructions that I'm going to use this weekend to make a Plex server out of a Raspberry Pi. So that's my follow-up. And I just dropped that into the chat room.
That's pretty cool.
And I mean, if you're not comfortable with command line, this can be pretty intimidating. Mm-hmm. But the instructions, they're very straightforward. It looks to me like they're actually complete.
Yeah, looks fine.
And then when you're done, you have a Raspberry Pi with an external hard drive attached, mm-hmm. loaded up with your media, and then you put your Plex client app on your Apple TV or whatever, and there you go.
Yeah.
So I have found pretty simple instructions for turning a Raspberry Pi into a Plex server, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, we're going to look forward to that and then see, like, report, please report back, like, how
I will. Went. Yeah, the Raspberry Pi that I'm going to use for this, let me rephrase that. The SD card that I'm going to use for this, which is in a Raspberry Pi right now, I've been setting it up for a cloud server, mm-hmm. just because I could. And I got partway through and got busy, and I just haven't been able to go back and finish up the last few steps. So it's basically at a state where it just needs to be, have some configuration stuff done. Mm-hmm. But I don't need a cloud server like that. I mean, I have a Synology sitting on the shelf right over here. So I already have a cloud server. So a Plex server makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It does. Cool. My cool thing is the app I'm using to broadcast right now. It's free, so that's a big plus. It literally just crashed on me like a couple minutes ago, so that's not so good. But I mean, we've had that issue with other software.
But you got what you paid for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it works. Like, I mean, I've used the software to test the stream like a couple of times. And as I said, like, I mean, you can't beat free. It's an open source project. It's called OBS Studio. It's available. The cool thing is available on Windows, on Mac, and on Linux. So it's truly cross-platform. And it is not too difficult to figure out. I mean, maybe it's just me because I've been doing broadcasts for, like, I don't know, 15 years or something. Maybe it's just, like, that knowledge. But, like, I figured it out, like, within couple minutes. Like, all I needed was a couple of scenes and transitions, and that was it. So like I didn't need much. The streaming setup is super easy. It records at the same time, uses very little CPU. Like I'm using 27% according to this right now. Like the Zoom is actually using most of the system CPU, stuff like that. So it is, as I said, it's free. It's frequently updated, so it's not abandonware that like nobody ever touched it again. Works on Catalina native, like out of the box. As I said, it's free. There are better apps out there, definitely. They cost money. I would recommend them. Like I know Doc recommended one recently. I would recommend them, like if you like if you're serious about it. But for the like today, I have to broadcast and I only have like 30-40 minutes to set everything up. It was the fastest way to do it. As I said, you can't beat free, and they support like all major like networks. Like we have our own streaming server, but you can go to YouTube Live, you can do like whatever, Twitch, whatever you need. As I said, very simple, simplistic. Like the UI is not very fancy, it doesn't have fancy features and transitions and lower thirds and all of that. None of that, as far as I can see at least, is built in, but it has everything you need to like do a broadcast, switch between like what I can do, switch between different settings, and yeah, do whatever you need, like stream it, record it. So obsproject.com is the website. I'm gonna put it in the chat as well. Good. Then, chaps, Alistair, let people know where they can find you.
Oh, I'm still on Twitter, Ali Dabs. Find me there. That's it.
Okay, that was simple. That was fast.
Yeah.
Jeff, how about you?
Textexpander.com and JGamut on Twitter and Instagram. And since I always tell people about the upcoming webinars, Thursday the 14th, I have a beginner webinar. So you can learn all kinds of interesting things about using Text Expander. And if you go to textexpander.com/webinar, then you can see all of the upcoming events.
Yeah, very
and,
nice.
And we have a discount for BTN listeners. So you get 20% off Text Expander when you use the discount code BTN2020 when you sign up for your account.
Very nice. I can highly recommend that. We talked about it on the, I think after the, no, on the Mac show and after the Mac show a little bit. So highly recommend it. I use it every day, all day. So very good.
Same.
Very good. Well,
and that was even before I worked yes, for the company.
That's true. It's probably the reason why you work for the company.
Yeah.
All right. You can find me every week here on the Big Show and the Mac Show. Everything I do on thepatrice.com. And I have a new podcast I've been talking about last couple of shows. I'm going to repeat myself. It's called Foodie Flashback. It is about food and food-related memories. I had some really, really cool guests. Yours truly, Jeff, has already been on, and Ewan and Doc, and a couple other people. The latest one I've released is actually with a BTN listener, Tom Ferry, which was a super interesting one because he has never ever done a podcast before. So this was literally his first podcast ever, his podcast debut. And he's not a foodie, or at least he doesn't consider himself a foodie. So it was super interesting to talk to someone. Like he basically grew up like he grew up in Silicon Valley before it was called Silicon Valley, which is also really interesting. And it was like really cool. And like his wife told me yesterday that like she learned something like about him that she didn't even know. So that was really cool.
That's very
really
cool.
Really cool show. So if you want to listen to that, or if you want to even be like on the show, because I'm literally interviewing anybody who has a story to tell, then
please, everyone has a story.
Everyone has a story. Then reach out to me, foodieflashback.com or at foodieflashback on Twitter. You can find this very show and this entire podcast network on britishtechnetwork.com and also on Twitter at britishtech. And with that, thanks everyone. Thanks for being here, guys. And thanks for listening.
This has been awesome as always.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Smaller group today, but well, we made up for it, I would say.
A smaller group, but a quality group.
Oh, that is definitely true. Yes, that is definitely true. Yeah, thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.